When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And he's clearly having a blast. I think he's having more fun than anybody in this movie.
Yeah, well, the whole cast looks like they're having a blast.
Yeah.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Ha
ha! And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Yes! Yes!
Today we're going to be doing a mini pod.
Knivey pod.
Of Knives Out.
Knives Out.
Ryan Johnson's latest film, going back to the mystery genre. We don't see these very often.
No,
anymore.
We don't. No.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
I can see why they're not mass produced, but we need more.
He's dabbled here. This is not his first. Like, Brick is kind of at least the language of Brick is sort of like an old school kind of mystery, but here he just goes full Agatha Christie.
But it's not Agatha Christie. That's the issue. Like, Branagh did Murder on the Orient Express a couple years ago, and it's like it was a good movie. It was well done, but we've seen that exact same story done arguably better before.
Yeah.
And so even if you do get new movies with mysteries, they're usually old mysteries that you know. Even some of the Sherlock stuff, like, you've seen that before. Like, with this, it's wholly new. It's a new whodunit.
One
and you have to keep guessing.
I like most about Knives Out was that it's not at all trying to be a traditional Agatha Christie-style mystery in that it's not necessarily trying to get you to predict who the killer is. It plays a few cards early on that most mysteries wouldn't play that early.
Yeah.
And then it becomes about, well, what am I supposed to be figuring out? Well, the mystery is the mystery, if that makes sense. I think somebody said that to me on Twitter. I don't want to steal that. But I liked the off-kilterness of watching this, in that it felt very much like a traditional Agatha Christie whodunit, but also very much unlike that.
Daniel Craig is saying when he's in the car at the one point where he's like, I was looking for a donut hole in a donut, and now I found out there's an entirely different hole cut into this other donut hole.
So our donut hole is actually another donut.
Yeah.
I loved it. I really, really, really liked it. I am not 100% sure I connected to it as much as everybody else has.
Oh, really?
I'm going to give it a good grade. I see the artistry. I really enjoyed watching it, but it didn't grip me in the way that made me want to immediately watch it again.
Is this your oeuvre? Is this like, are you a mystery fan?
Like I said, there's
not a whole lot to choose from. You know, everybody brings up the comparisons with Clue, but that was 1985, you know? So I like mysteries, but yeah, I haven't been like steeped in them. Without a Clue was one of them. What is the other one with Michael Caine? Sleuth. Michael Caine is also in Without a Clue, I think, too.
Yes.
Yeah. But so I like it personally, but you're kind of just like, all right.
I honestly feel like this is one of those cases where I came to it 3 days too late, 5 days too late, and all I had heard was glowing praise.
Me too.
And so maybe that caused me to sort of challenge the movie more than I would have if I hadn't heard anything about it. I think the acting is insanely good. I particularly think the kid blue guy from Looper, who plays one of the two detectives, steals the movie for me completely. He's awesome. Obviously, Daniel Craig is outstanding. The pieces of this puzzle all fit together by the time you learn them all perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very clear he spent a prestige level of time planning all this out, and I can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I just did, you know, I guess I wanted to come out going, yes, and I didn't. I came out going, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That guy you're talking about is Noah Segan. He's been in every Rian Johnson movie.
Yeah, they have some kind of special connection.
Mm-hmm.
I think Looper was his largest role because he played Kid Blue in that, and that's his Twitter handle, I think, too. Mm-hmm. But he has very little lines even in Knives Out. It's a lot of what he steals the movie with are just
quick cuts.
Expressions. Yeah, yeah. Or him kind of like, he's a fan of everything. Yeah, he's a fan of the late author that owns this house. He's a fan of the detective that's come to town who has you know, a bit of a reputation. You know, I thought the score was pretty awesome.
Yes.
There's not going to be very much I say that I think was bad about the movie. I guess I wanted to feel the magic a little bit more because it seems like everybody else did.
I've seen this movie twice.
Yeah.
I watched it, I think it was opening night, and then I watched it with Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it more the second time.
Mm.
Mainly because now when you know how everything falls together, you can start looking for other things, and it's amazing how many other like layers are in this thing that you didn't realize the first time. I really loved this.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this a lot. Acting performances, I agree with you. I think this is a breakout role for Ana de Armas, mm-hmm. who has been kind of this, I don't know, girlfriend, wife in American movies and everything.
She almost turned this movie down. She did initially because it was sold to her as the Hispanic housekeeper. And mm-hmm. she was like, I don't want to play any more of that. Like, I want to do more meaty roles. And then they had to get back with her and say, no, this is the meatiest role in the movie.
Yeah. And even stuff like Blade Runner 2049, I don't feel like she was like really used well. I mean, she's integral to the plot and everything, but like not, I mean, she's a hologram.
Yeah. She's a sex bot. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a sex bot. Yeah. And like the first time I ever saw her was in War Dogs? I think the Jonah Hill.
Really?
Jonah Hill movie. I remember because she's stunning.
Yeah.
She's absolutely stunning. But that's sort of what they've played up with her is how stunning she is. So like she's always this sexy, you know, whatever. And here she's just like dressed down.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to, you know, just eat up this role, and she's terrific in it. And there are parts in here where she's so funny, I don't even know if she knows how funny she is. I would love to know what her thought process was and all of this, because there's some things in there I'm like, do I think this is funny because she's delivering this line just perfectly, or is there some other aspect? I don't know what it is, but she's hilarious in this.
She is.
Very sneakily hilarious. Of course, Daniel Craig is great in this,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Craig, I mean, this could have been over the top,
mm-hmm.
and it ends up not being over the top at all.
Yeah, it could have, especially with the accent.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not easy to carve out your own compelling detective,
mm-hmm.
in, you know, this world where we've got a Sherlock Holmes, we've got a Hercule Poirot, we've got, you know, we've got all these famous people who solve murders. To put yourself out there and create a new persona, I think, is a little risky. And he's clearly having a blast. I think he's having more fun than anybody in this movie.
Yeah, well, the whole cast looks like they're having a blast.
Yeah.
But yeah, they even subvert it within the movie with Chris Evans' character saying, you know, what's with this fucking, like, Colonel Sanders routine?
Mm, yeah.
Shit like that. And I'm like, yeah, it is. But he's just right on that edge being, like, you know, too much.
Yep.
And yeah, and I'm so glad, too, that it's not like, he's got this wicked sense of ability or anything like that.
Right.
He's doing real detective work, you know, and you'll see that by the time this movie is over. Like, he's doing real detective work. Mm-hmm. He's thinking it out. He's not sitting there going, oh, I see some wine next to the fireplace. There must be a secret passage here.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I'm going to get into a fight. Well, he's going to do this first, and then I'm going to dodge it, and I'm going to do this. You know, it's none of that bullshit. I enjoyed all these. The family is a cast of characters. They're a mix of liberal and conservative, mm-hmm. like alt-right conservative, mm-hmm. and everything. Michael Shannon, of course, is great. This one's, he's not super intense and in playing Michael no. Shannon. He's yeah. like playing a real guy in this, you know.
Has the biggest laugh in the movie for me. I mean, I absolutely rolled. This isn't a spoiler, but he's yelling at Chris Evans, who's been like just smarmy and eating these cookies and shit like that. And then finally the family erupts and there's just a quick shot of him screaming at Chris Evans going, "How'd you like some more cookies?" Yes. It is typical Michael Shannon thing. Yeah. And it's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my one complaint, I guess, would be that it ends up, the cast is so great, it ends up feeling like a few of them don't get enough to do.
Yep. Well, Lakeith Stanfield, for one, yeah. I don't think does. And he's like, he's been great and commanded almost everything he's ever been in. In Atlanta, he's like a smaller character, and he just owns that show yeah. a lot of the time. And then he gets one little spot in Get Out, and yeah. And he's the main guy in that sorry to bother you in this one, he's the lead detective that's actually come out to, he's basically ruling this a suicide and everything, and he doesn't have much else to go on. He's got a couple of lines here and there that he gets to, but he feels extraneous when Daniel Craig's there doing his thing, and then yeah, you have the other dude, his partner, is yeah. like making these little quips, and he's just kind of the straight man to everything.
Yeah, he's the Joe Friday. I actually, you're right, because he could do more, but I think the movie needed one non-insane character.
For sure. I
think he does the most he can with it.
It's just one of those where you put the actor in and you wish it was somebody else, and yeah. then Lakeith Stanfield could have played one of the more interesting characters.
Yeah. I have a feeling, because I mean, I think I'm going to be on an island here, but I think even Jamie Lee Curtis and Don Johnson could have used more time, and Toni Collette.
Yeah.
I think there's a 2 hour and 40 minute cut of this movie somewhere that would be right in my way.
We need crazy? To release the Johnson cut.
I think I just wanted more, because for me, in a mystery, when you short shrift somebody on time, you have either written a bad mystery if they turn out to be the killer, or you've told me up front, like the kid from the It movies, I'm not worried about him at all. Like the whole movie. He's inconsequential.
Who's described in the most fantastic ways.
He is, and he takes all that with a straight face. But as an actor, if I were him, I'd be a little disappointed that I was called in and basically stare at my phone for the whole movie.
That's true.
Should we grade it and go into spoiler talk?
Yeah, let's grade this thing and go into spoilers.
This is an A for me, bordering on an A+.
Mm-hmm.
I had so much fun. Now, I think I also suffered from the lofty expectations, and I hate that. I try to like tamp those down and just try to focus on the movie in front of me. But this was really, I was anticipating it on my own, and then I heard all the good stuff, and then when I finally saw it, it somehow lived up to those expectations, almost exceeded it.
Hmm.
I agree with you. It's weird because I would never call for a longer cut of a movie most of the time.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think you could give a little bit more, and this could, I don't want to go back to this universe.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's at least an A for me.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to give it an A as well. It's one of those movies that I don't know if I could have enjoyed more. I guess it would have taken just a few other little special things for me to make this an A+.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was an A. I enjoyed every bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go A- only because if I go A, I don't think that truly represents my experience, because I do think everything about it was great. I just didn't feel the magic that everybody else felt.
Sure.
But I can hardly knock it. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let's talk some spoiler shit.
All right. Let's go on the spoilers.
No spoilers!
Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze.
Miss Luke's what? Father is actually Darth Vader. What? She's the sister and the daughter. They just
No. I'm reading the books.
Yeah, so we were talking. I was about to get into spoilers in the before the spoilers, but the character that I think it's Jade Martell is his name.
Yeah.
Is this. he's not used very well either, and he is just looking at his phone most of the time, and it looks like he's a character that might come at, back to be like all these characters and mysteries that they don't focus on. You tend to think, oh, well, maybe they know way more than they've been letting on this whole time. And then there's going to be this big revelation and everything. But nope, never happens for that guy. Yeah.
He's just the masturbating Nazi.
He's just the masturbating Nazi, yeah.
It's so casually yeah. mentioned and revealed. It's so great.
Yeah. What I guess everybody is alluding to, how this is not really the typical whodunit mystery, is that we know who did it. In somewhere around the first third of the movie, we know, because it does it in this sort of almost Mission Impossible way, where you remember when Ethan is like thinking about all the things that are actually happening,
yeah,
while John Voight is sitting there telling him what really actually didn't happen.
Yeah.
So a lot of these people are telling stories like, well, oh, it was just about this. And then they tell the truth in the flashback.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little unusual, because you're expecting that whatever they say to be what is on the screen, and it's not. And everything is a lie. Every single one of those people lie to Daniel Craig and to Lakeith Stanfield
mm-hmm.
and everybody. Early on, we know that Christopher Plummer has committed suicide, and he's done it for a very, very strange, like, elaborate reason.
Mm-hmm.
Considering the family that he has left behind, it is the ultimate self-sacrifice that you would never expect.
Yeah. Yeah.
The long story short is she thinks is she's given him 100 milligrams of morphine.
Right.
When she usually gives him 100 milligrams of whatever that other thing
was. He goes,
was.
How much do you usually give me? And she goes, 3. It made me think of John Lovitz, because he says something like, well, that's a great deal more.
Yeah. And he keeps, he's like, so you gave me 100 milligrams of the good stuff. And she's like, after I've given you this much, you may want to stop calling it the good stuff. Yeah. You know? she believes that she's given him 100 milligrams of morphine. He's only got 15 minutes to live. If she can't find this, like,
naltrexone or whatever the antidote is.
Yeah. They have this antidote that comes along just in case this type of thing happens, but she can't find it. So he thinks, well, it's going to take 15 minutes for the cops to get here anyway. Then when they get here, they're going to ask a lot of questions of you. And then your whole family's going to be deported because you're from, they change it 4 or 5 times. Yeah. It's so funny. Nobody knows where she's from. They say Uruguay, Paraguay, Ecuador, Brazil.
Funniest
thing ever. The first time I watched it, I didn't even notice.
Oh,
that.
Really?
Yeah. I was just sitting, because it didn't matter to me where she was from.
Like, yeah.
But they were saying Ecuador, and then somebody says Uruguay later, and you're whatever. But then the next time I went through it, I was like, damn, 4 times.
And it's stated as a matter of fact, too. They're like, it's not even a question.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, maybe Bolivia or something like that.
Even some characters who have already stated Ecuador or whatever will go to Uruguay or Paraguay.
Yeah, and it's a great juxtaposition with, because to her face, they're like, well, we want to take care of you. We want to use some of this wealth that we were going to inherit from Dad. We want to you're part of a family. And it takes nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing for them to turn on her on a dime later in the movie, because that's not genuine. That's not how they really feel. The reaching for the not knowing what South American country she comes from and not giving a shit, that's who they really are.
I think that's sort of
the point.
Yeah. And he believes that, yeah, they'll be deported. Her whole family will be deported. So in the act of self-sacrifice, he tells her, this is what you need to do, tells her all these steps to sort of like get away with murder, even though she hasn't made it, hasn't done the murder. And he kills himself, and then she has to go back and follow all these steps and everything. But meanwhile, there's other stuff going on in the background with the Chris Evans character.
Yeah.
And he's got his own thing going on. And it's a crazy. Now, if there's any one thing about the plot the whole like switcheroo thing that he does, I wish that it meant more to the like she gave Christopher Plummer the right
correct
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I remember, he switched them,
mm-hmm.
and then she accidentally switched them when giving the dose, and that's why she thought she'd given him 100 milligrams of morphine.
Correct. The label was
the label said
incorrect.
Morphine.
Yeah, yeah.
And ultimately, if Chris Evans had never switched them, what he wanted to happen would have happened anyway, because she mixed him up.
Well, no, that's what I'm that's what I'm getting at. It wouldn't have happened anyway. Because
how's that?
Because she would have looked at the bottle and seen the liquid was different in each bottle. The reason why she gave the right thing was because she didn't bother looking at the label. She just knew what it looked like.
Okay.
Because she's a good nurse.
So it didn't matter what happened when it didn't matter that he switched it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a typical irony that comes from something like this that I wish had happened, and there's no irony here.
Yeah.
There's no irony because it turns out it wouldn't have mattered one way or the other because she's a good nurse.
Correct.
So that was the only thing. I wish that it mattered more that he switched it.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think that worked for me just because that is the only tangible evidence that they could have had is the tox report saying that he didn't have that morphine in his system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what triggers the whole reveal, is that if he had the right medication in his system, or if he didn't have the wrong medication in his system, then that's the key that opens up this whole
thing. Well, she's a good nurse. Mm-hmm. She would have maybe known the difference, but she still fools herself.
Well, because the liquid is already transferred.
Right, but she looks at the labels and doesn't go, well, I would have known the difference. She goes, oh, I fucking killed this guy.
Correct, yeah,
and
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
But
in a roundabout way, that's why he's dead.
But the reason,
no, yeah, exactly.
But the reason why he said that was not that, it's not that she looked at the bottle and go and said, oh, this is it. It's I think he's talking about her subconscious. Subconsciously, she knew.
Sure.
And that may be like not well represented by the way he says it. It sounds like, oh, you just knew, because she didn't just know, or else that would have never happened,
right,
and
right,
everything.
Right.
I just feel like that was the one thing about it. I was like, I wish it mattered more, because she was going to give him the right dose. I guess the only thing is that, yes, she does have to look at the bottle and realize that the label is switched.
Yeah, I think that's why, and she plays it so perfectly. I think that's why she has this great moment of panic, because I think she's trusting her instincts and she's like, hold on one second. And then she looks at it and she, you know, her heart drops basically.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, how could this have happened? But I don't really have time to think about how this could have happened because you're about to die.
Yeah. The one thing that bothered me was the vomit lie detector.
Yeah.
I figured.
Not because it's vomit on screen, which it really only is the last time. And
yeah,
yes,
yeah.
That's gross and unnecessary, but I know why it's there. But just the idea that, I mean, because it becomes pretty fucking important,
mm-hmm.
at least twice in the movie, that she pukes if she tells a lie. Although she says early in the movie, even if I think about lying, I puke.
Right.
And then later in the movie, she lies, and it's a good 20 seconds later before she pukes.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was a little fast and loose. And the whole idea that everybody knows she's going to throw up if she... I don't know. I did not like that point at all. And that's maybe the only real gripe I have.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe that might come back as another thing, too, is that she would either be faking it or some other kind of thing was going to happen where, like... Like, oh, that's reliable. We know that she throws up when she lies, and that she would just do it on something that she told the truth about.
Oh.
And I thought that was kept was going to come back into play, and that never really did either. Those two things that I'm bringing up are very minor.
Yeah.
I don't want to make it out. It just feels like when you have something like a bottle switching or something like that, kind of a plot thing with the vomit or whatever, it feels like there should be a little bit more irony there.
Mm.
And I guess the way necessarily this mystery rolls out, you can't really have the irony. You have no way of making it ironic by the end of it. But I really was kind of hoping that, like, oh, because she knew and because the bottles were switched and all that, if he had never switched it, it would have ended in his death. I wish that's sort of, but you can't do it the way it's constructed.
I got you. Yeah.
So I did like the, once you find out at the very end, when Daniel Craig motions to the blood on her shoe, that he knew she had been involved somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole movie is kind of playing with, does he suspect she's done something, or does he think she's really nice and he's just using her for information? You don't really ever know until the very, very end. But I love that sequence in the middle when the dog runs up to her and hands her this broken piece of trellis that she climbed up, and she like puts it behind her back, and Daniel Craig doesn't see it, and then she turns and throws it, and you're like, wow, she got away with it. Nope, dog comes running back up and hands it to Daniel Craig. I love the way the mystery revealed itself, sometimes out of Daniel Craig's control and sometimes in it. And then the whole twist about what did Grandma see, because we know one thing Grandma saw, but Grandma saw more than we knew. Like, it's just, it's so tightly written. It's hard to not just praise the thing.
No, that was my favorite part of it. And I think that noticing the dot on the drop of blood on her shoe, I think that's a little wink to him revealing the answer to the riddle early. Because, like you said, the mystery is the mystery, right? Because you see exactly what happened. And it doesn't even look like it's an unreliable narrator or anything like that. It looks like this actually happened because she's going downstairs and with the cowl on and all that stuff. And I was like, hold on. So now we know. And now we're set on this chain of events of, is she going to get away with it? That kind of thing. And then what is the purpose of the family? And then the will reading and all that stuff. It takes you on such an unusual journey for a mystery where you're, like you're saying, you're not trying to figure out who done it. You know who done it. But, like, there's got to be something else that I'm missing here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's just revealed in such a beautiful way, I think, visually, with that whole Game of Thrones knife thing in there. And then with Daniel Craig, like, undressing, basically, and, like, putting his tie in and all that shit. It's just beautiful. I love it.
That was another thing noticing on the second runaround was how Christopher Plummer was talking about how Chris Evans reminded him of him when he was his age.
Mm.
And how he said, I didn't know the difference between a real knife and a stage knife. And by the end of this, he pulls out a stage knife. He tries to get it off of that Game of Thrones thing to stab Ana de Armas and everything, and it's a stage knife. And,
boy, everybody, all the cops were pretty slow on the drop in that scene, though.
Yeah, they were.
Because, I mean, he pulls that knife off and lunges at her, and then the cops start moving, and if that's not a prop knife, she's dead.
Yep.
By the way, Chris Evans' face during that scene, one of the most menacing things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it's insane how, like, I would, like, really very scared I would be of seeing that.
It does sort of all require the grandfather to have told one of the children he was going to give everything to Marta.
Yeah.
And that seems a little out of character for the character as we see him on screen. Because if he doesn't tell Chris Evans, I'm cutting everybody out of the will, I'm giving it all to Marta, then the movie doesn't happen as we know it.
If he just says,
I'm cutting you out.
Right. No, I agree.
Because everyone's mad at him, and everybody wants money, and he's pissed off everybody that night. He fired Michael Shannon. He was going to reveal the affair that Don Johnson was having. Everybody's mad. Everybody's got a quote-unquote motive, but he specifically told one guy. Well, and he had even set up this whole thing for them to come in with the lawyer and have the thing read and read the letter first. And would a manipulating gotcha kind of guy like that, would he tell somebody early? Would he tip his hand?
Okay, so I think that they set this up to where he communicates to each of his progeny in different ways. Like with Jamie Lee Curtis's character, it's the invisible ink. It's the tricks and the games and stuff like that. With the Michael Shannon character, he's pretty direct with him when he's firing him, but it's clear that he's been coddling him all this time. And then he'll say that, you know, with the Chris Evans character, he's the most like me there is. And so I think it makes sense that he's communicating with him more directly and more honestly,
okay,
saying, fuck you, dude. You know, you've been a fuck up this whole time. That's it. And he even comes clean with the Toni Collette character. I had to go to the bathroom during that scene. But it seems like he's a little more, like, I don't know, couching her feelings in his reveal to her.
Oh, I didn't feel that way. Was this talking about the money that he's not going to give anymore for the school?
Yeah.
I felt like he was slapping her around.
She's double dipping, essentially. One goes to the actual tuition so that her daughter can go to college. And then the other, I don't know how the other one got paid out, though. I couldn't quite follow that. Like, why was he giving two different...
From what I could hear on the way to the bathroom, it sounded like he's only giving her money with a little bit extra for the tuition, and she is
like recharging that amount for her personal gain.
Yeah, but it just seems like that's something he would have figured out if he was paying that much money.
That's true.
Towards it, if there's no, like, I don't see where the secret, unless she's got an account that she can withdraw from anytime she wants, and then it's just like, well, that's a little bit of money that he won't miss.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can see that, whatever. And she is actually, she's the wife of a son that he's mm-hmm. lost. So she's not really even part of the family, but she says, oh, I feel part of the family. And their flashbacks is like, shows her trying to dance with people and nobody wants any part of
it. She keeps like touching the other one. She doesn't even move at all. I also love the bit where, okay, the first 25 minutes of the movie is kinetic as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it has to slow down by nature after that. But that's where I was most feeling the magic, is when he's interviewing everybody for the first time before Daniel Craig's even spoken. And the cop will ask a question and Don Johnson will answer and he'll go back to the cop and he'll say something else. But then it'll be Michael Shannon in the chair. And like Don Johnson's memory of the birthday party is like him and his wife behind the grandpa was blowing out the candles, and then when Michael Shannon's telling the story, it's Michael Shannon and his wife standing behind while they're blowing out the candles. Everybody has their own. I enjoyed when the movie did that and played with the everybody's perceptions being different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Also has one of my favorite final shots in a movie.
Oh my God,
that's gorgeous.
So we have that will thing that happens in there where he's given everything to Marta. I'm interested, by the way, if he didn't die that night, because he just switched everything over.
Sure.
Like, just did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if his plan was to get everybody to like maybe have one last chance to get back into the will and everything. Although he does tell Chris Evans that I'm giving everything to Marta. So.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that was a sort of a charge out there to everybody, like they've been put on notice or whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he knows Chris Evans will want to kill him. No idea. A lot of this stuff converges all in one night. But the will, with the will reading, everybody's expecting to get one piece of this thing. Jamie Lee Curtis is expecting to get the house. Michael Shannon's expecting to get the publishing. Mm-hmm. And, then Chris Evans knows he's not going to get anything.
Right.
And Toni Collette, I can't remember what she supposedly, I don't even know if she was expecting anything, but everything goes to Marta. And so then the second half of this movie is where basically Chris Evans thinks he knows that she killed him, and we don't know exactly what his motives are at that moment, but you think, oh, he might be a good guy after all, or mm-hmm. whatever. They go through all this stuff, and then, yeah, by the end of it, they exonerate Marta, and she is at the top of the little balcony thing, looking down on the family that used to be in this house. Everybody's just looking up at her, and she lifts that mug that says "My house, my rules."
Yeah,
my coffee.
My coffee. I fucking love it. It's the next time I watch that movie, I'm probably going to go into tears, because it's just one of those where the tension just builds up.
Well, and they show you that mug in just the right way earlier in the movie, mm-hmm. so you remember it when you're seeing that final shot. And as my eyes were going down, I think my brain, my memory, got to what it said before my eyes did. And God, it is one of the best final shots I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it gives me chills, and that's one of the things that is the movie's going to leave me with, that great, just like, oh man, that's exactly how this movie should have ended, mm-hmm. and everything, because there's just a big, huge undercurrent of other political things going on in this movie, and that last scene is such a like a triumph.
In the beginning of that last scene, they're all leaving, and Jamie Lee Curtis is like going to smoke a cigarette, and that's when the ink shows up, mm-hmm. and she finds out Don Johnson cheated on her. Don Johnson's out in the driveway and turns. Next time we go back out there, he's got a big fucking black eye.
Yeah.
But he's got a big fucking black eye.
Yeah.
And I like almost as much what the movie didn't show you as much as what it did.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I guess we're all definitely recommending this movie. This would be a hard recommend from all of us.
Yes, absolutely.
For sure.
You could double feature this with Greedy.
Funny when I was going through that will thing. I was sitting there going, man, this is a lot like Greedy was. Where, like, Kirk Douglas is doing this whole thing where he's, like, basically auditioning everybody to get in his will. And Michael J. Fox is the only guy who shows any kind of, like, you know, humanity in the whole thing.
Phil Hartman's so great in that movie.
Oh, yeah, I know. Oh, my God. But, yes, we are all recommending this movie. Knives Out is one of my favorite this year. Parasite would probably be up there. We haven't been having a chance to talk about Parasite much.
Mm-hmm.
But Parasite's in that conversation as well. A couple others maybe, but those two have stuck with me the most.
Yeah, I'd say that right now it's one and two with those. I had just a fucking blast. When we were casually talking with Jonathan before I had actually seen this movie, he was saying I'd like to actually see more mysteries with Benoit Blanc. I totally would. I want to go back to this universe. The way that it's shot, Rian Johnson, or his cinematographer, shoots this just... It's not really like anything that you see out there because the source material is so different. You don't usually see it's like Game Night, mm-hmm. where you don't usually see this level of cinematography with mm-hmm. this type of movie.
No, yeah.
And I want to go back to that universe. I want to see this movie again, like, as soon as possible.
I actually thought that while I was watching it was that this character's strong enough. He could be his own Poirot and do other, whether it was books or graphic novels or movies. That's mm-hmm. that was a strong character creation the two of them. I think it took Rian Johnson's writing and Daniel Craig's interpretation. But yeah, I'd watch more with that guy.
And mm-hmm. and the good thing is that Knives Out is a hit. Like when I saw the trailers for this, however long ago it was, I was like, oh man, Thanksgiving release. I don't know. But it just started building this sort of like, everybody started, I kind of want to see that. Everybody was kind of, I kind of want to see that. And it's made $120 million worldwide so far.
Wow.
That's awesome. $60 million here, $60 million elsewhere. We could very well see more Benoit Blanc at some point.
Well, good. I mean, you know, we had this groundswell of support for something like Booksmart earlier in this year. That was this year.
Yeah.
Right? That would be, God, this year has been forever.
It has.
But it didn't translate to box office success, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm glad at least one of these did. You know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think Booksmart will find its audience.
Oh, totally.
Even Superbad wasn't like a huge box office.
Well,
bonanza.
No, it was.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was big.
How big?
100 and something million domestic.
Okay, that's big. Yeah. Even some other movie besides Superbad that went on. Even Austin Powers wasn't a big hit when it came out, but it grew a following later.
Very true. Very true. Everybody needs to go see Knives Out. Of course, if you're in the spoiler section, you may have already seen it and you just want to hear what we say. Mm-hmm. You've already seen it. We are highly recommending it. And we can move on with our lives now. All right. Well, that'll do it for this mini pod. Go to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on SoundCloud, Reddit, CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. And we're also on Discord. If you want to get on Discord, you can get a link on the Reddit page on the right side of the page, or you can go to the Facebook page and private message me and I will give you a link.
Nice.
Yeah. But that'll do it for this one. It's Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Barrett Scherer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
I'm just seeing that Joseph Gordon-Levitt apparently has a voice cameo as Detective Hard Rock.
On the TV show, yeah. I heard that, too. I would never have caught that.
On the TV show?
They're watching TV at some point. He's a voice on the
yeah,
TV.
Yeah, the her sister TV. Is watching that mystery whatever thing.
Suck my ass. You remember in City Slickers 2 and he gets bit on the ass by a rattlesnake?
Yep.
And he tries to get the other friend to suck the poison out. But mm-hmm. he ends up, I think it's the tall one with glasses who was in the Celtic Pride movie. Daniel Stern.
Daniel Stern.
I think it's him.
Yes, Celtic Pride.
Wait.
Motherfucker is in
that is
Home
that
Alone.
Is an amazing pull.
he's in Celtic Pride.
He is. But what's amazing is that we all were like Daniel Stern immediately. Not like one of the wet bandits in Home Alone.
Or the narrator of the Wonder
narrator
Years.
Narrator of the Wonder Years, but Celtic Pride, Daniel Stern.
Oh, it's got to be Daniel
yeah,
Stern.
Yeah, it's like we were in Quiz Show and shit.
Oh, my God.